What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome on into the Brass Ring Media Podcast, the second of two flagship shows throughout the week. I'm Zach Hadron, your host, and with me today, special guests in the seat of Tyler Sage, Joel Pearl from Fightful. Joel, man, thanks so much for taking the time to join us here. It's great to have you.
Thanks for having me. It's always fun to sit down and chop it up.
Heck yeah, man. Well, and also, you know, you were at AEW Dynamite last night, so I think you'll have some really interesting insights being in the building and having not seen it on TV. Let's dive right in. Like, I guess not so much a specific question about the show itself, man, but when you're in the building, you're sitting there. Is AEW a hot product right now? Like, did it feel that way based on how the audience, you know, reacted?
Yeah, to be honest, the people who were there were having a ball, myself included. I had a really good time. I was sitting with some media. I was there as media, but I was also sitting with people who were also given, you know, comp seats from other places, not necessarily media, but like everyone was just having a ball. It was a good show. It was a good time. Fans were very into the things that you saw on TV, and overall just a pleasant experience is how I would put it. It's different from a WWE show. It's
right.
It's less polished, which isn't a dig at AEW at all. It's just a different presentation. There are fewer children in the audience. There were more this time than the last time I was at an AEW show at Coca-Cola Coliseum. Last time I was here, they ran the Forbidden Door pay-per-view. More kids were there, but it was still a different show. They ran Scotiabank Arena, which is the NHL arena. This time they were running the AHL arena. It's a little smaller, so it's a little different. But it was all in all a good show. One of the better ones I've seen for sure.
Did it seem like the kids that were there like were connecting with this product, like, or were they there with parents who like AEW?
Well, it depends. Some of them were younger, some of them weren't. The teenagers who were there were having a ball, but the kids who were younger and there with their parents, you know, their parents are wrestling fans and they're there too, just to cheer them on. For all I know, they were there because they're huge Adam Copeland fans and they grew up, you know, right, idolizing Edge in WWE or Christian for that matter, or they've attached themselves to other AEW stars that they know through AEW and not necessarily through WWE where they may have started, or, you know, or they're just there because mom and dad dragged them.
Yeah, right. Yes, like my kids would be. Who did you get the sense that's like, because I certainly have a distinct opinion on this after watching the show on television, but who, you know, in the building, did you get the distinct sense of like, this guy's the most over, either heel or babyface? Like, who stood out as far as that goes?
Will Ospreay easily, everybody, and his, I said this to the person sitting next to me who does Raptors stuff. He's involved with Raptors media, and I turned to him and I said, he has his presentation down pat. When he comes out, he knows all of his cues. He knows how to do his entrance. He knows where to go to the crowd to get them to do the Ospreay chant. He has that intangible and that knowledge of like how to get the fans invested. So he's a guy. Mercedes Moné, of course, she's just come in, so she is now a hot commodity for the company, and rightfully so. If any of the figures are anywhere near what she has made, then she is going to work to make sure that the money she's getting paid is valued. So you see it from her. It's fresh. People like that. She's obviously got a huge fan base. That goes somewhere. So she's another name. And Kazuchika Okada is another one. But that's just because in this case, this was the first time Toronto had seen Okada since Forbidden Door. For me, I'm sitting here like, oh, I just saw him in January in Las Vegas.
No, Okada.
It's just Okada.
Yeah. I mean, dude, you know, I know you haven't watched the show back yet on television, but the Will Ospreay came across the same exact way on TV. I mean, he has an energy about him right now that, like, I watch him and watch, like you said, there's a crispness there. There's a, like, being a professional on TV there, hitting your marks, hitting your spots, you know, cutting a good promo. That, like, and he's not known as, like, a promo guy, but he's so energetic and so intense in a way that's not inauthentic, that's not like, didn't come across as like, oh, he's putting this on. It's really authentic, and I think he connects with the crowd that way. Like, I watch him, and then, you know, you watch him do that promo and you know what he can do in the ring and the type of wrestlers that AEW likes to showcase and the type of wrestling that they like to have on their shows. This guy, I mean, he has to be a guy that Tony Khan looks at and goes, okay, if I was old school, you know, evil promoter guy, this guy would carry the entire weight of the company and just go, you know, go put him out there. He's your face. I mean, I just think he's synonymous with what AEW wants to be in so many different ways. And he's getting the exact reaction that he wants from the crowd.
On top of that, I think one of the smartest things that they've done in terms of the presentation for Will Ospreay is the fact that he doesn't have to wrestle every week. Could he? Absolutely. Yeah. Would he put on an incredible match every time he's out there? Yes. But instead, we're playing it in a character. We're letting him have his moments in front of the microphone, and we're letting him get his charisma across so much tidier and so much better so that the fans get invested in him and they don't just say, oh, this guy's having a great match. No, they're saying he's not only a great wrestler, but he's also a great entertainer. And that is something that I want to see so much more out of when it comes to AEW and their presentation, because there were so many times where I'm turning to people and I'm just like, I'm so happy that they're good wrestlers. I really just want them to be great at entertaining, or at least shaping their character to the point where you know how you should be reacting to them, or how at least the majority of the crowd should be reacting to you. Christian's amazing at that. Don Callis is incredible at that. And you saw that last night.
Oh my God. Yeah. In Canada, of all places.
If you ever doubted the piped in booze conversation, I posted a video. Those boos were loud and clear, and he was not. You couldn't hear a dang word that Don Callis said. And I thought that is so important for the presentation of a wrestler who is trying to get over as either a babyface or a heel. In this case, Don Callis can get that heat, and we need more of that separation. There's nothing wrong with cheering the wrestlers you like, but I want, in the terms of presentation, I want to know who I'm really supposed to like and who I'm supposed to not like. Yeah. And you don't have to hit me over the head with it, but at least give me those subtle little details to say, oh, you're a little Dickens. You're a little guy. I get it.
No, absolutely. Hold on. Let me make a quick note here. Don't ask Joel about content of Don Callis's promo.
I couldn't tell you other than there was a match.
Yes. Oh, man. All right. Well, I want to get back to that because it actually leads into another one of the topics that I want to discuss. But let me set the table here for the show. This is the Brass Ring Media Podcast, the second of two flagship shows. We do two flagship shows throughout the week, one on Tuesday night, right in the middle of NXT, and then one on Thursday afternoon. We are live also on Mondays and Wednesdays, and late nights on Thursdays as well. So we've got a lineup of live shows right here on the Brass Ring Media YouTube channel all week long. Hit subscribe if you haven't done so already. I think you'll be happy with the shows and the different perspectives that we give, but with the same type of tone around how we cover professional wrestling. So subscribe, hit that notification button so you know when we're live and you know when we drop a brand new video that may not be live, like the interview I just put up with TNA World Champion Moose. He was an open book in this interview about being the world champion and like the responsibility he feels in that role. Also, you know, all the influx of new WWE talent. He spoke about them coming into the company and what it means for them, for the company, and for him. How it's a little weird to see that these days in TNA. So highly recommend you guys check it out. I certainly enjoyed talking to him. It's up on YouTube right now. And you can also check out written form of that interview on our Substack page. Our Substack newsletter is free to subscribe to. So you could just hit Brass Ring Media Substack in your Google machine and it will be there, and you can subscribe and get that article as well as lots of other features and show reviews all throughout the week. So Brass Ring Media on Substack. And then, of course, if you want to become a member, we would certainly love to have you. You get a free member podcast once a week, all of our pay-per-view and PLE review shows, access to our Discord community, which is regularly a blast. So we'd love to earn your business. So give us a shot. It's patreon.com/brassringmedia. As for today, the live chat's open. Super chats are open as well. So if you are willing and able to make a contribution, ask a question, make a comment, we'll make sure to get those read live on the air. And of course, we certainly appreciate the contribution in advance. It really helps us do this thing and keep this thing going and get it to where we want to go. So thank you, thank you, thank you for that. Joel, you do a ton of stuff for Fightful. Talk a little bit about your plate of content that you are responsible for on a week to week basis. You really do some awesome stuff over there.
Thank you. The answer is too much. tonight, for example, and every Thursday night, myself and Cresta Star are live doing the post TNA post show. Do we have Moose as an interviewee? No, but I've interviewed Moose before. He got us in some trouble, but that's a story for another time.
Oh no.
Jeremy Lambert and I have talked about that openly on In the Weeds, which is a show that we host over on the Fightful Overbook channel. That's kind of like our ESPN too. So if you go over to youtube.com/Fightful Overbook, not right now, do it after we finish here, and so hit subscribe and go watch In the Weeds. We do that every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, live from 10 a.m. Eastern till noon, talking to wrestlers, talking about the stories, talking about the news. We're a morning show. Nothing is serious. We brought in Surfer Son of Sting, Garrett Borden. We had a great conversation with him.
That was an amazing interview.
Thank you. We had a blast talking to him. He was a wonderful guy. So we're lucky. We have a lot of really great content over on Overbooked. And not to be outdone, I've got an interview in the can that's going to be coming out soon on Fightful with the one and only Evil Uno from AEW. We got to link up and have a conversation after his mystery wrestling show that he does in Gatineau, Quebec, which is just outside of Ottawa, where AEW Collision was. So we got to talk about Collision. We got to talk about mystery wrestling. And I got to tell him that he never won a watch from a local Ottawa radio station, but I did. So technically,
oh man, I hope you needled him with that one. Yeah,
I got him with that. He looked at
got
me.
Got him.
I was
got
like, him. I said, you remember this jeweler that used to give away free watches? And he's like, yeah, of course. I said, I won one. Anyway, we had a really good chat. It's about 10 minutes. It'll be released in the coming weeks leading up to WrestleMania, which I know is separate from AEW, but our content timeline right now is all based around what's happening in Philly in a few weeks.
Yeah. It's going to be a big weekend. You guys will be busy. We'll be busy. Looking forward to that one. All right. Very good. Well, let's just get rolling here. You mentioned like the importance of having your wrestlers defined the right way and therefore reacted to the right way. You also mentioned Kazuchika Okada, and I'm watching that match last night and I'm like, man, look, the wrestling fan in me, sure, I want to watch Okada versus Eddie Kingston, but dude, that guy got a hero's welcome. And he's tooling around backstage with the Young Bucks, who are supposed to be like super heels. And I was willing to kind of give this Okada heel new elite thing a try. But seeing that yesterday, man, it's like, I think they may have missed the mark on that just because people want to cheer Okada. Like you said, it's Okada. Like, and you know, there's most of this country has not seen him live and in living color before. Like they know a lot about him, especially AEW fans, but you know, he's not been like just on a grand tour of the United States with a US promotion behind him. And now he is, and you've kind of asked your fans to like go along with this heel turn. And it just, I don't know. It just isn't working, and I thought it undercut Eddie Kingston last night. The match was fine. I enjoyed it. It's fun to see Okada, but the more and more you watch him with the Young Bucks, it's like the audience isn't going to buy this town to town. Like in theory, good idea, but at least from what I could gather from the reaction yesterday, that heel turn is not effective right now. What say you?
So there are points that I agree with you in, and then I remember, who has AEW brought in over the last month? They brought in Kazuchika Okada. They brought in Will Ospreay. They brought in Mercedes Moné. If you take those three talents alone, you cannot have them all debut as hot new babyface acts. You have Okada, yeah, who have history with the Young Bucks and the Elite as a whole. You have to do something with Okada that's fresh, that's new, because this is a crowd of people in AEW who they've seen more Okada than they've seen Will Ospreay, Mercedes Moné. Those two are going to come in and they can be perennially over. Moné, for example, she's coming off of, you know, this I she's always going to be a fan favorite. We'll leave it at that until she decides that it's time to turn. When it comes to Will Ospreay, he's being presented as this white meat baby face that is working. Okada has been that way coming out of New Japan Pro Wrestling. They gave him an edge on the way out when he was, you know, beating up young boys, which did rule, by the way. Great. Come on.
Joel.
That's a good presentation. But there was also a time when he debuted the Rainmaker character that he was corporate and he was a bad guy. He was a heel. So now for him to come in and align himself with the Young Bucks, it makes perfect sense. I understand too that all these crowds are cheering for him because he's fresh new face. But in terms of presentation, they're presenting him right. He is saying the right things. He's acting the right way. And you can't really turn the tide on the fans who want to see him wrestle because he's a good wrestler. This is the issue with presentation in AEW, where it's like an excellent wrestler gets cheered, but there's a ton of excellent wrestlers on your roster. So the presentation of the character has to dictate how you cheer or boo for them. We will get there with Okada. I really do believe that because the presentation makes sense for him, given the points that I just said. And I am seeing someone in the chat saying, you know, AEW have too many faces right now. And there is a good point to that.
Yeah.
There is a use for Okada coming in, being completely different from how he's been presented before, not only leaving New Japan, but also coming into AEW where he has been a hot baby face before. Let's do something different. And to me, it's working on the presentation. It just needs to get there on what happens when you come back to Toronto in a few months. I'm not saying they haven't announced it, but let's say next time they come to a town where Okada's already been, how do we know whether or not they're actually feeding into him being a baby face or a heel? That's the big question.
I mean, there's going to be some of that initial, like, as you mentioned, you know, they are like, he's written as a heel. I mean, like, they were all like jerks to Alex Marvez backstage. I don't know if you're able to hear.
Everyone is.
Yes. By the way. Really, that's like a babyface turn if you think about it.
But honestly, they've also played it with Marvez is the perfect person to do it to.
Yeah, he is.
He's their version of Kevin Kelly 1999. We don't talk about Kevin Kelly anymore. But the point is, Marvez being there, he's the right foil. He's the right dorky looking person to get this kind of attitude. And it works.
Yeah. I think for me, it's like, it's one thing to like, okay, you're being this heel wrestler and you're getting cheered. Like, you're right to say you can't do anything about that. If you're going to get cheered, you're going to get cheered. It doesn't matter. I guess and this goes for like WWE guys too, like Rock, for example, the other night on SmackDown. It's like, if you're trying to get booed and then you get cheered, that's one thing. But if you're a heel Rock and you're a heel and you're getting cheered and all you're doing is like fanning the flames of those cheers, like that's where it gets like ineffective in my eyes. So like for Rock, you know, he's sitting there and there's like, you know, they're cheering him and he's just talking about how great Memphis is, loves Memphis, like classic babyface. And I'm like, you're kind of undercutting, you know. I'd love to see Okada, even as people are cheering him, if he's going to play like that heel role, act a little heelish during the match, you know, like, now I'm not saying cheat and I'm not saying Young Bucks interfere, but like, you know, some underhanded tactics, like some extra viciousness perhaps. And that all might be on the horizon, but I just want to see the guys try to control, manipulate that reaction that they want to get. And sometimes you just see that more than others. And you know, I hope it comes with Okada. Cause I think you're right. Like, it is crowded as in the babyface column. But if you're cheered by everybody, are you really a heel? Like, that's like the question. So we'll see.
He will get there. And just because you brought up The Rock, I think the Memphis promo was actually really, really good. Because what The Rock did was walk into a town that he knew he'd get cheered in, because guess what? The Rock's going to get cheered wherever he goes. And he did the thing that he always does. He's an egomaniac, so he got those cheers. He did exactly what he was supposed to do. He got himself over. And then when he turned his head and did the Mama Rhodes promo, people were listening and people were reacting accordingly. That's when he got into the meat of it. He knew it doesn't matter where he is. He's going to get cheered because he's The Rock. So he's got to play into it a little bit. And then when he gets into the actual match, when he gets into the actual story, That's when things changed for The Rock. That's when you could tell he did everything so well, in my opinion. Even the part where he does the, you know, all I have to say is you're welcome. The Moana reference was just perfect. I mean, I don't know if you saw our friend Tom Campbell from Cultaholic. After he did a silly little 10-second clip from Moana with that song where he throws the girl into the cave, and then he superimposes the now go home and smoke some crack and close it. I was like, when I saw him do the you're welcome segment or moment on the promo, immediately I was like, he saw that stupid video.
He saw it.
And here we are. So my point being with The Rock is that I think he's actually doing it right because he knows that he cannot turn the tide immediately with the fans. So he gets there by praising them, and then he turns it on its head when he talks about the match that he's doing and the story he's in.
It's a good point. And like the good thing is with him, like we'll see. He's not gonna be on this week, but you know, he'll be on Raw in a couple weeks. And I mean, I hope that's what it is. Like, I really do. Like, I guess like I took a negative approach of it. I'm like, dude, Rock, you're just trying to be a cool guy. You're just a cool guy, Rock. Like, come on. So I'm gonna look, yeah. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And you're right, like me and him, Okada, Ospreay, like when he was brought on, you know, initially, like to do those Forbidden Door matches and like join the Don Callis family, like he didn't have a chance in hell of getting like truly, truly booed. And I don't know, man. Like sometimes, like hearing you talk, I'm getting more philosophical here, I think, but it's like, am I pining for a day that like just might not be around anymore? Like with some people, it can, like with Christian Cage, like he can get true, you know, real heel heat, even amongst an audience that, you know, appreciates the heel heat and the heel character that he's playing. Like he's able to kind of like, boom, like cut that. And like, all right, I'm trying to be hated. So I'm not going to do anything that people, you know, may like. And I'm not trying to compare, you know, Okada to Christian Cage, but it can be done in 2024. Maybe I'm just, you know, maybe it's just, maybe in my head, it's just more possible than it actually is for some of these guys.
It's a culture thing. And I talked about this with someone at AW last night. And I said, there's the hardest thing wrestlers today are facing is that in order for them to get bookings, they have to get over. In order for them to get over, they have to be presented in a way that the fans like. You know, they have to be liked by fans, and then they have to interact with social media, and they have to get over on social media, and then the adulation comes, and then all they want to be is over and accepted, and then that's a feeling and that's a rush, and then you got to go get the big contract, and then you got to work, you know, this and yeah. There's just this big confusion going on, whereas guys like Christian Cage didn't go up, they didn't grow up in the social media age for wrestling. He had to send a tape. Ron right. Hutchinson was like, let me send a tape to whoever at WWF and get you a tryout. You'll work Hamilton this weekend and maybe you'll get a deal. They didn't have to deal with that. And now I think there's a new crop of wrestlers, or at least it's been for the last 10, 15 years, where it's been largely social media getting themselves over. And it's not a bad thing. It's just the way that the system has evolved, that they get booked based on their reaction and based on their engagement and based on their followings. And that kind of messes things up. And that's why, again, in the WWE system, for example, they're like, we'll break you down to understand the psychology of it. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to have to figure out how that works for you. We'll give you a whole new personality, a whole new everything. And again, that's just like the weird part about watching wrestling today is that if everybody's over, nobody's over, but everyone has to get over in order to move on to the next step.
Well, and then there's this idea of over too, where it's like, okay, you know, our truth is over. I mean, is he? I don't know. He's a certain type of over, but he's not over like, oh man, we got to put this guy in the main event of WrestleMania over. You know, he's got a Miro Rusev day back in the day. Like that was a thing and it clicked, but it wasn't something that like moved the needle for him. You know, it did for a little while, but not where you had to go, oh my God, we got to put Rusev in the main events. And like,
Shameless plug. We did an interview with Fuego del Sol. And this was fairly recently. And we talked about the what it is to be over. And he talked to us very honestly about conversations he's had with Cody Rhodes. And Cody is very much this guy who pines over what is over. Mm-hmm. And he said, guys like Chris Jericho, love him or hate him for online, offline activity. I understand it completely. I'm not the biggest Chris Jericho fan when he's been overexposed and when, you know, there are some other things that he does outside of the wrestling ring that I'm not a big fan of. But he does move tickets at the end of the day for those of us who are not paying attention to that other side of Jericho. Right, right. And he is therefore over. He moves merch. He is over. Sting, last match, over. That's why he was in the main event. He had a years, decades-long career, over. You respect that. Cody Rhodes used to be one thing for over, and that was the R-Truth and all that. Now he's over. They're running tickets for him. People are going to see Cody Rhodes, not just interact with Cody Rhodes.
Yeah. It's a good point. Yeah, I think CM Punk is the same way, you know, and you don't have to be the biggest CM Punk fan in the world, but the guy, when he's around this, he turns your head that way, you know, for better or worse. Yeah, he does. So, good point. I mean, gosh, we could do a 3-hour podcast on this, to be frank, because it is really interesting. And I think you bring up a really good point to call out the fact that, like, hey, these wrestlers that are coming up, they're working a certain way, and then they're taken out of that environment and dropped into like major episodic television on, you know, in prime time, week to week. Whereas when you're working outside that, you're like a month here, a month there, maybe you're back for a month. Like, it's a totally different ballgame. I talked to like Mike Bailey about that too. And I'll post some of this actually on our channel. But he said to me, he's like, you know, what is a good match? Well, first and foremost, it depends on
coming for you, Zach.
Hopefully everything's okay. It depends on the environment that you're in and what you're being asked to do, because a good match, you know, in front of 200 people for an independent promotion in Philadelphia, it's not going to be the same thing as what a good match needs to be on WWE television on Monday Night Raw in front of 1.6 million people. So like, there's that to factor in here too. And I think, you know, really, if we really were to break this down, I think you'd see some of the best talent, you know, that has come into AEW and WWE both, you know, throughout the last 5 years from the independent scene, have figured out how to make that transition. Guy like Joey Janela, great independent wrestler, didn't really click once it got to be national television. Guy like Orange Cassidy, he figured it out. He figured out a way to like make that gimmick, you know, work week to week on national TV. And I think if we like went down the rosters of both companies, I think you'd be able to call out like, oh, this guy figured it out clearly, you know, and it's a really interesting nugget that you brought up. I'm glad you did. Even about Fuego. That's cool.
Yeah. Great chat with him.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let's get to a super chat here. It's also about AEW Dynamite. A couple of them actually from our good friend, Zach Barber. Zach, thanks for the contribution. And he says, Hook tossed Chris Jericho on his dome repeatedly. Am I a terrible person for enjoying that? So Joel, you can answer that question first and foremost, but what'd you think of the Hook versus Jericho match itself and where, you know, they may be taking that thing?
This was their SummerSlam 2015.
Yes.
And people were chanting Suplex City. And I said, oh, they're doing it. They really are. It's not bad. Yeah. It's not bad. They did the right thing by having Hook win. They didn't do a you know, Jericho's the legend, he's going to get one over because he's got the experience. No, they had Hook go over and Jericho shake his hand and say, no, you did that. You beat me. Yep. Favorite thing to tell people is that this is the second time Dynamite's come to Toronto and they didn't play Judas, and that's fantastic. Second time Jericho's come out and done the Lionheart gimmick.
Wow, yeah, okay.
And this time, so the arena was 50-50 for Jericho, and I couldn't figure out if that's because they were playing White Zombie and not Judas, or if they were actually just sick of Jericho. I understand, again, the online sentiment with Chris Jericho, and I do agree. I think he could go away for a month or three and then come back with something, whether that's a reinvention or just a return to form, whatever it is, there's something in his eyes is lacking. And he's just, I think there's a lot more going on than he'll let us ever know, whether that's in his life or beyond, whatever. It's just something's missing. So the spark is missing. And maybe that's the character that he's trying to play right now, because he's doing a 30 plus year old gimmick and trying to revive Lionheart. And the Lionheart is currently dying. I don't know. But now he's got this whole thing with Hook where he's like, I have a proposition for you. And I thought to myself, Hook doesn't really cut promos.
No.
Chris Jericho cuts promos. I think he's going to offer to become Hook's manager for a little bit. And if that's what happens, I don't think I want that either.
Oh, man. I didn't even think about that. Yeah. Oh, geez, man.
Well, then they're not joining the tag team tournament. They're not going after the Ring of Honor tag team titles. There's no reason for them to team up in the grand scheme of like titles in AEW, and there are plenty of them to go around. So the only thing I can think of is he's either going to manage Hook and be like, we're going to get you back to world champion status, or I'm going to coach you to win another championship. And at that point, what does he do? Hook wins the title. Jericho turns on, they start a whole new feud. Jericho beats him as the Painmaker, and we're back to whatever. And that way Jericho doesn't leave, but he doesn't wrestle either. So I don't know if that's what I want to see, but it could be what we see.
Yeah. That's a good, it's a good point, because you're right there. The tag team scene is really like, I mean, that's jammed up too, not necessarily at a main event level, but there's a lot of teams there. Zach, I think to answer your question, everybody likes what they like, I guess. So you're allowed to like that. I'm assuming it's because of his off air antics, and ones that I don't agree with either. As far as the match went, I thought it was a really smart way to present the match. And that's one thing you can count on with Jericho. Like, for the most part, like when he is invested in like accomplishing something, like, okay, we have to make Hook here somehow. Like, we have to make him look good. I think you can trust him to do that the right way. And then as far as like Hook being able to work with a guy like Jericho in the ring in that match, I mean, I feel like that's like, you know, you get a heavy, heavy dose of learning and training and knowledge just within that. And so that's good for Hook. But the match itself was smart. Like, it wasn't overindulgent. It didn't, like, they didn't try to, like, cram, you know, 10 pounds of stuff in a 5-pound bag. Like, they kept it really simple, but everything they did looked fine. Like, by the end of the match, like, you felt those bumps Chris Jericho was taking. And I think that was the idea. We're going to do so many of these suplexes that by the end, people are going to think exactly what Zach just mentioned here. Like, oh man, this guy's just throwing him on his darn head, like for the last like 5 minutes. And so it made, like, he sold for Hook in a big, big way. And I think that's effective. To your point, now it's like, what's next? What is this proposition? Because Jericho, you know, there's stuff that he's done with younger talent, like, you know, like MJF, for example, that helped get MJF to like another level. There's other stuff that he's done with younger talent, like Action Andretti, that has not done that. And so he's got like hits and misses on both sides of the ledger. What happens here will be really interesting to see. Like, you know, is he really able to kind of elevate Hook a little bit? Because I have to think that that's the idea here.
I should hope so. Otherwise, where are we going with
this? What are we doing? Yeah.
But I want people to go back and watch this match and look at it keenly and take a look at how many moves were actually hit in the. And I'm talking like there were a bunch of German suplexes. I'm saying as like individuals. So like one German suplex done 20 times. I'm counting just one German suplex. Okay.
Right.
Versus chops and attempts at line, like look at the actual match structure, and it was really simple. And I think that is worth pointing out. They kept it simple and they left it as I keep dropping me on my dome with the same stupid move over and over again. Maybe hit me with the T-bone once. I yelled that from the crowd and then he did it. I was very happy.
He listened to you.
He listened, but we'll get into that when we get to Edge and Christian. Adam and Christian. But anyway, the point being, count the amount of actual moves in that match that were not repeat moves. And there was maybe 10, 15, and that was a 10 to 15 minute match. And I think that's worth shouting out because they kept it simple and they made it effective.
Yeah, I think it is too. I really do. And I think this kid, that's smart. Like if you're Chris Jericho these days, like, man, number one, you can't do it like you used to. That's just a fact of life. And so don't try. And the good thing for him is he's got so many other tools at his disposal to use to like still have good wrestling matches when he's 50 plus that not many people have. Man, use those instead. Use those instead. Like, and this was one of those times. Like, all right, I guess I'll just bump forever on this German suplex bump. Okay. But you know, you're not trying to like jump off stuff and flip around and hit a whole bunch of crazy moves. Like this was simple, just to the point. Yeah. Thanks, Zach, for the comment. We'll just jump right into his other one here. Will Ospreay versus Katsuyori Shibata on free TV. What a timeline we live in. Yeah, well, Joel, what was your initial reaction to that match being announced? And what did the building think when it was announced too live?
I love that he calls out Katsuyori Shibata and everyone's like, yeah, and said next week, boo. And I just said, what do you expect? You got to build dynamite with this.
Yeah. I felt bad too, but yeah.
It happens a million times. Also,
yes.
I was lucky enough to go to Ottawa and watch Collision. So I saw Danielson and Shibata live. And that was a fantastic match. It makes perfect sense to have Ospreay run this match with Shibata, given that the guy he's facing at the next pay-per-view, where it is all about who is the better wrestler. Well, they're facing the wrestler. So this is a really, really good setup. I like they're doing it. I like that Shibata got a win on the way in between. So he had Kevin Matthews, who, by the way, I looked at and said, is that Kevin Matthews? He's too big to be Kevin Matthews. And then they brought out Shibata and they said, in the ring, Kevin Matthews. And I turned to my friend and I said, did Kevin Matthews eat Kevin Matthews? Because that doesn't look like Kevin Matthews.
And I realized, doesn't look like him.
It looks like the guy looks double the size of Kevin Matthews. And yes, then like, oh, he's been with Fall Above for years, so that'll probably change things. But either way, with Shibata, it's right. It looks good. And I'm happy that they're running this match. Could it have been a pay-per-view match? Sure. But there's no reason to make it a pay-per-view match because you can build to it with bigger stakes down the line and still make it as important.
Yeah, it's really cool. I think it's like a perfect TV match for them. Like it's not a match that you want to like necessarily put on pay-per-view, not because he can't deliver, but just because, you know, Shibata, like, you know, you gotta be careful there. Like, you really do. Like, can he have like these long burner pay-per-view matches anymore? I don't know. You know, I still like when he takes bumps, I'm like, ugh, you know, but on TV, like, they don't have to go long. You know, hopefully Ospreay gets, you know, obviously he's gonna get the win here and like, you know, continue this journey of like, hey, I can do anything you can do better, Bryan Danielson. But yeah, it is a kind of it's a crazy time. Like, this match, even in New Japan, 3 years ago was okay, not going to happen again because of what happened to Shibata. Now, and then if you would have said, well, it's going to happen, but it's going to happen in AEW, that was even more kind of a are you crazy type response that I would give. And here we are. So I think it's going to draw well. I hope, you know, it's going to be there for like the AEW faithful are going to be there for that for sure. And so, you know, hopefully, you know, the Will Ospreay, you know, people keep sampling the product for Ospreay, and this is going to be a great match for him to showcase what he can do to get those people to keep coming back. So glad, yeah, Zach, glad you're excited for it. It's I think you're certainly not the only one.
Yeah, you should be.
Yeah. Okay. Last topic here about Dynamite. The I Quit match. The crowd seemed super into that match, man. I mean, like, they really did, especially, like, the start. Like, how cool is that? Like, Christian and Copeland, opposite ring, you guys gave him a loud standing ovation. And then the match, like, kind of went haywire in certain parts. Like, you had hockey nets and hockey fights, and then you had, I'm going to literally try to kill you with this rope and choke you to death. So it was pretty manic as far as that goes. I think, you know, for me personally, I think you want to be more consistent with how you like present a gimmick match like that. And like, okay, are we joking here with hockey nets or are we actually trying to kill each other with like, you know, with ropes? But that's just me because I look at the audience reaction and man, they were in, or it seemed like they were in, you know, the entire way. And so talk about the match and talk about how the crowd reacted to Copeland winning the TNT title.
The most WWE ass match AEW's ever put on.
Yeah.
And I mean that in the most pleasant way possible because they did everything that you would see in a WWE street fight on a pay-per-view. And that's a good thing for these two guys who are trying to blow off this whole match. And you know what? They did it well. They had everyone eating out of the palm of their hand, not just because they're local to Toronto and the surrounding areas, but also because they're just They're good at this. They're good at the storytelling. I agree with you that, yeah, like some parts got a little too cutesy. But like even when they did the whole running into the women's bathroom, they did the thing where they just showed the long hallway. They didn't take you into the bathroom. So it's like we respected their privacy, but also we still went and had a fight in there. It was a really, a really strange, like, how do we make this work? Kind of. I could see like early in the day, Adam Copeland being like, I don't want to make it weird. So how do we make it work? And then that's how they did it. And it was fun. So that part alone made me laugh. And then the little moments where, yeah, they did the hockey fight stuff. Adam Copeland has said a billion times how much he's wanted to wrestle at Maple Leaf Gardens, which is now like a 7,000 seat venue that Ring of Honor tried to run in 2019. And it's just, you could do it, but AEW wouldn't do it now. So this is the best. This is the next best thing to, instead of working, you know, the hockey arena, the NHL arena down the street. And they weren't going to sell out for that because that's a 19,000 seat arena. And they did well last night, but it was just different. So this is an AHL arena. They got to use all of the stuff. I was sitting with the hard camera and all night I kept looking at these three open boxes that were covered by black tarp. And I said, why is nobody sitting there? And then I saw them go in there and I said, that's why. And I thought, I saw Cecil Nix and Damien Doom, I think was his name. They're local independent wrestlers from the Ottawa area. They did the jersey spot where they ripped the jerseys off and all that. This was fun. They did the hockey fights because, of course, it's Toronto. And then the whole time I'm watching the middle of this match when they're finally back in the ring and all the craziness with chairs and tables and people chanting TLC. And I said, where's Spike? Where's that stupid gimmick that Adam said he was going to use? And he brought it out on Saturday and he showed it to us. And we all said, ooh, where is that thing? And literally as I say it, he jumps out of the ring and he pulls out Spike. And I'm like,
and there it was.
Earlier in the night, just to set the table, I had spent the entire night joking with my friend, kick him in the dick. And they'd look at me and be like, what do you mean? I'm like, it's wrestling. Turn the ref away, kick him in the dick.
That's exactly what I mean.
Get the win. That's how it works. No disqualification, or the referee doesn't see it, kick him in the dick. So the end of the match comes, and everyone's tied up on the ring posts. And all of a sudden, Adam Copeland kicks Christian in the dick. Not once, not twice, but thrice. And then uses Spike, same nether regions. And I am a kid in a candy store, Zach.
And he listened to you all throughout that match. My goodness gracious.
All throughout the night. That's all I wanted. The night. Dick kick enthusiast Joel Pearl came out, got his money's worth. I didn't pay a dime. But the point is, I was listened to. I was heard. And Adam.
That's what matters.
TNT title. That's right.
Did the crowd pop for Copeland winning the TNT title? Like, well, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. That's what I figured. I mean, what do you think about that? Like, it's a mid-card title and it's Copeland. That's kind of where he is too, I guess, right?
You had to do it because otherwise, what's been Adam Copeland's like modus operandi since coming into AEW? It hasn't even been the title. It's I want to be friends with my best friend, and then my best friend said GFY, and so now we're off to the races. We can't tag team together, so now we have to have a blood feud. This was the culmination of their blood feud. Inevitably, they will get back together when the Young Bucks call them out for their own retirement match with them, and then we'll be back to Adam and Christian best pals again. Copeland and Christian. This match, though, was the perfect culmination for this story because it had gone on long enough and they spent enough time building it leading into this match that the reaction, like, if Copeland had lost, what was he going to do?
Right. Well, exactly.
Yeah. You're going to turn him heel? Great. That's fine. But then Christian's still a heel, too. It was fine to know that this was going to end with Adam Copeland winning. And now you have to start building up younger talent to face Adam Copeland and have great matches with him, and then inevitably build one person who's going to go have a great match with Copeland and win the TNT title, and oh my god, it's going to be Hook.
Yeah, well, hey, I mean, look, it might be, but you're right though. Like, I think this is like, this gives a good opportunity, because I mean, part of the allure of Adam Copeland coming over to AEW is all the matches that he just never would have in WWE. I mean, you've got Samoa Joe that he can work with. You've got, you know, Kenny Omega at some point that he can maybe work with. You've got Adam Page that he can work with down the road. Swerve. I mean, there's all sorts of people that are now on the table for him. And I think that almost, like, if you were feeling like, oh man, like Copeland has really been like, eh, like I just, you know, you like his feud, but like, with Christian, but okay, it's been going on a long time and you're like, okay, let's wrap it up. Well, now it's kind of open where you can really start to get some of those matches, whether or not it's for the TNT title or not, or he loses it before that. Like, if he pivots now to some of the tried and true, like AEW guys, and can have, you know, a blood feud with some of them, or just, you know, good programs with a lot of them, I think like people will get the, that's what I wanted to see with Copeland type reaction. Cause you know, Edge versus Christian, I mean, we've seen it before. It's been a while, but they're both WWE guys doing their thing in AEW. Like, now you want to see Copeland go out and face some of that AEW talent that was so enticing when he first came over. And that's finally a possibility.
Yeah, we've moved past the main reason he came in. He's accomplished goal number one.
Right, exactly. And now they can get to other stuff. Christian will never be a father again from our
biologically,
yes. Those kicks were wild. And then Zach also, and then thank you, Zach, for the contributions here, man. Also talking about the women's division. What do you think Willow's feeling more today? The code blue on the table that didn't break, or the DVD off the apron through the tables? Yes. Yeah, so Zach's talking about the Rampage match. I would say that if you haven't seen this, I'd go out of my way to see it. It was a good match. I mean, it was a street fight, you know, crazy match, but it was enjoyable. I thought it was enjoyable and a good kind of framing of the women's division. I think she's fallen. I think she's feeling the code blue more. That's just me personally. It looked like it hurt. Joel, what do you think of the match?
I think she's stealing the DVD, and I'll tell you why in a few minutes. But
okay, go.
What's so funny to me is that the AEW women's division has been like this point of contention for so many people. And we know that these women can work, and that we know that these women are really good at this. And every time they have a street fight for the last 3-4 years, they've run a street fight. They've always hit, and they've always been good, and they've always been highly praised. Because these women know how to do this, and they know how to make this good, and they work their butts off to make sure that people understand what they can do. And that's like, it's like the most frustrating but also satisfying part of watching AEW is that it's like every time they proved it to you, you need to listen. And that's what these street fights are for the women. So this was really good. Willow's been a part of 3 out of 4 of these things. So that's also
she's great at them, man. I mean, she really is.
Yeah. Knows what she's doing, knows how to get around and tell that story. The DVD off the apron hurt her more for sure, because they know that table doesn't break, and a code blue is an easy move to take. Just flip around, land on your back, versus you got to do a little neck toward, and you've got two tables in the way. You could see her.
There are two there.
You got to hope they both break, that they both break in the right spots. You got to hope that you don't crank your neck the wrong way on the DVD. She was definitely, I'm not saying she's injured, but she was definitely selling, and she was definitely feeling it when she hit it. You could see her be like, oh, that sucked. So I think it's a DVD.
All right. Thank you, Zach. Appreciate it. We'll wrap up AEW talk there. I want to get into a couple WWE topics before we wrap up here. We're coming up on our time. Ronda Rousey, Joel, has been in the news the last day and a half as excerpts from her book come out. Her book's going to be released this spring, I believe. And man, they are eye-opening. Not surprising anymore, given what we know about like that company. So it's not like I'm reading these kind of allegations or how she's talking about the powerful men in the company and being surprised. But I am surprised that Ronda's the one who is out there saying it and writing it in her book. I mean, she's in the book here, there's excerpts of her talking about Bruce Pritchard and John Laurinaitis and basically telling them to F off. She talks about Vince McMahon and how, you know, he's almost, I'm paraphrasing here, but infatuated with how Saudi Arabia treats the women that live in that country. How the WWE is just a complete madhouse and that she would never go back. Again, none of like the specific comments are surprising anymore based on what we know. But it's Ronda, and she's never, like, I don't know, she hasn't been like a figure in UFC or WWE at the time to kind of like take a stand like in that type of a way. And this is now Ronda, complete 180, dropping F-bombs about some of the most powerful people in WWE. So what'd you think of like her comments and Ronda being the woman to kind of blow the whistle a bit on them?
I think people also need to recognize that Ronda Rousey is a giant advocate for not only women in sport, but also the trailblazing that she has done in her time in judo and then later on in MMA in the UFC. That's why she says these things, because she is there specifically for the betterment of women in sports. That's her angle. And she's not, listen, all the power to her. I love it. I'm glad that she does it. Do I agree with everything Ronda Rousey says about everything? No.
No.
But in the terms of this book and the things that she's saying, yes, she absolutely hits it on the head. A lot of these things have been either open secrets or recently revealed in the lawsuits and investigations. I do want to know from Ronda Rousey's team, was this always in the book? Was this at one point taken out and then re-added after the lawsuit came in so that she could speak more openly and more freely without fear of litigation? I do wonder where that is. Because if they were able to just slip that back in, and this is, again, it's not a dig at Rousey, it's not a dig at anyone, it's just like, from a legal perspective, I would love to know, were you able to just, you weren't originally just able to say all these things, but then as more information and more conversations opened up, maybe you were able to get through that because these are open conversations that are happening now. And with Ronda Rousey, at the end of the day, she has a lot of FU money.
She does.
Two other people in WWE that also have that money are Pat McAfee and The Rock. And look at the way that they act on TV. They act as if they're there to have a good time and to do their job their way. And that's what Ronda wanted to do on the way out. Unfortunately, WWE, Vince McMahon, they had other plans for her. And then her second run just sucked. And the more I'm reading these excerpts, I'm thinking to myself, okay, maybe Ronda wasn't as checked out because of Ronda as maybe we all thought. Maybe Ronda was checked out because of the way she was being treated. That doesn't mean she was easy to work with. She had plans laid out for her at one point that were totally fine. They looked good. And she said no. So she's able to
she's Ronda, like, in that regard, you know,
control her character.
Yes.
But with that in mind, it does give me pause when I say, oh, remember when she cut that promo after she won the Rumble that she shouldn't have won, where she said, I'm going to go mack up my baby on my bus and I'll see you on Monday. And I was like, that sucked. Why did you come back if that's what you care about is your baby? Congratulations. I have a 2-year-old. I love him to death. But
if you're cutting a wrestling promo, you're not necessarily leading with that.
And that was really the problem, from the get-go. And then again, reading the excerpts, I'm just like, all right, I'm starting to understand. What are we doing? This makes sense.
That's a good point. And yeah, because you look at that last run that she had, man, and it was just so flat. And it looked like, everybody around it was disinterested. The people that were working with her were disinterested. She was disinterested. The writers writing for her and it were disinterested. It was so flat. And the thing is, like, it's a good thing that, like, she, and these are experts, right? So, obviously I just want to just be clear. Like, we don't have full context around, like, broader points that she's trying to make in the book here. Those might even be more, devastating for the people that she mentions. I don't know. But regardless, like, it's good for a talent like her to come out and say that stuff, because she's not beholden to WWE. That's not like the only thing that she does. Like, if there's other women who have experienced that firsthand in WWE, they may or may not feel like they can do that because they don't have the type of power. But Ronda does. She has that, the cachet. She's a big star. She's not as well known as she once was, but man, there was a time where she was the hottest athlete, on the planet. And so, like, there's a credibility that comes with that. And, so she doesn't say one bad thing about in these excerpts, there's not one bad thing about the women that she wrestled. or the people, the women that she worked with. It's all, you know, higher ups and backstage and politics and the treatment of the women's division. And, you know, she'll be able to, you know, turn some heads on this and kind of speak for the group. And I think that's, you know, that's important, especially in wrestling, where for so long, you know, that voice wasn't there clearly. And now, you know, you start bringing in some people that can flex their muscles a little bit, this stuff starts to, you know, starts to come out. And it's great of her to do that, even though, yeah, there's some things I don't agree with. But on this, I'm like Tracy here, who's like, go, you know, go Ronda, like, go get to it, say what you want to say and get this out the door. Like, I, you know, it's good for the business for this kind of thing to happen.
Yeah. There's that meme out there. The worst person, you know, just made the best point.
Yes, exactly. Right. This is like right there.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? But again, going back to her work with women in sport, she's the right person to be doing this. She stands up for women in sports all the time. This was no different.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see like the fallout for this and actually read the book and see, you know, kind of get a sense of that, context. But boy, if you were, if you're a Ronda Rousey fan out there hoping she comes back to WWE, it doesn't look like that's in the cards anytime soon. And you know, but who knows? It doesn't even sound like she wants to be there, but like, it also kind of explains in more detail, like that little weird ROH run that she had, like not a run, but like the two match deal that she did like last year. I always thought that was bizarre. It's like, if you're going to do a wrestling match, like why wouldn't you do it like on a WWE house show or something? Like, if you just wanted to have, but like here you are in Ring of Honor TV. It's like, that was weird to me, but now you know why. Now it makes a little bit more sense as to why that would happen.
Yeah.
Okay. Last topic of the day. And then we'll get on out of here. This Friday on SmackDown, we're going to have a face-to-face Cody Rhodes with Roman Reigns one-on-one, supposedly, as long as Cody Rhodes shows up by himself. Paul Heyman guarantees that Roman Reigns will show up by himself. I am on record, Joel, of saying that this is maybe the most important segment that WWE will have going into WrestleMania here. There's been a lot of time spent on getting this tag match in order because they have to do something with Rock, you know, at WrestleMania. And so a lot of time has been spent on Cody and Rock back to Cody and, you know, Seth and Cody against Rock and Roman Reigns. And in the background of that has been, well, Cody's going to try to finish this story and win the world title from Roman Reigns on Sunday. But it has been in the background up until this point. And it shouldn't, it can't be. Like, it has to be like a signature, one of like 1A, 1B signature things going into the show. So to me, on Friday, we need to see like Roman Reigns A-game, Cody Rhodes A-game step up and really like hit a home run with this segment, because there's not two, you know, there's only two Raws left and two SmackDowns left after this. So it's not like they're stocked with inventory as far as television hours go. This is a big moment, and I expect them to go out there and really try to drive home, you know, the angle here of Cody winning the world title and having that be the focus. So take that any direction you want. Like, agree, disagree. I mean, how do you grade the WrestleMania build so far? Just kind of, you know, marinate in that for a little while.
So with this whole Cody and Roman, I agree with you. This has to be the promo that gets you excited for night two.
Yes.
All eyes right now are on night one because it's The Rock, because it's the tag team, because you have both heavyweight champions involved in the story. Seth Rollins, I'm going to get to in just a second, but you have to tell the story of the night two main event, which is Roman Reigns and Cody. That has to be explained, and that has to be put into perspective beyond the involvement of The Rock. I'm really hoping, and this is why I'm glad to say this out loud, I'm glad that I've been wrong the last few weeks when it comes to, oh, this is going to happen on Raw. I'm glad that I've had a bunch of finishes where I've been like, oh, Liv Morgan will get involved in the last woman standing match and help Becky win. did not happen. I'm glad that they're getting away from things that used to be huge booking crutches. So I'm really hoping that they stick with the no one else is coming out. It's just going to be Roman and Cody. No physicality, just two guys telling their tale.
Yeah,
that's it. And it ends with Paul Heyman. Maybe Roman tries to goad Cody into taking a shot. And as Cody's about to, Paul just says, nope, not today. You fight when you're paid to fight. And Roman gets out and that's it. And it's a mind game. If they do that, perfect. That's all I need. I don't need Solo Sikoa in a big oversized hoodie doing.
No, good grief. No,
don't do it. I don't need a fighting segment. Don't need it. We got enough of those. The only fighting I need right now is April 1st on Raw in New York. I need Seth Rollins to slap The Rock. Because Seth Rollins is the guy who's been sitting in the background of this entire build by means of like, everyone around him was injured, including himself. So nobody knew what Seth Rollins was going to do for a time when it was supposed to be Seth and Punk. And that got all turned around. And now McIntyre, of course, has put himself into a grand position where he is. That build has been the focus on Raw for the last few weeks, which I appreciate. But now we got to tell the story of what is Seth Rollins doing with The Rock, because The Rock keeps saying, I'm going to do this and your title's going to be gone. Poof. What does that mean? Someone has to figure that out. And the World Heavyweight Champion should be the guy to ask the questions. And everybody needs to slap The Rock. Let's face it. Once.
Yeah. No, I mean, he does. I mean, I think it's important for everybody involved in this match, night one, night two, to have that moment with The Rock. Roman did when he kind of was like, I need you to acknowledge me type thing. Like he had that moment of like, yeah, don't forget, like I'm a big star here too. And I'm the head of the table. I'm the tribal chief. He had that. Cody, I thought, had that this Monday, you know, with kind of the scathing kind of promo that he had, where it's like he had a chance, 5 minutes, 6 minutes or whatever, to go at The Rock, and he slapped him, you know, a week before that. You know, Seth, you don't want him to, like, clearly look second fiddle to not just Rock, but to those other two guys, too, to Roman and Cody. You want him, like, he's the world champion. Like, you want him to be, you know, in that upper echelon. So yeah, I think if you're Seth, you're like, come on, Hunter, give me something here, man. I'm just like a punching bag at this point. He's calling me an emoji clown. Like you got, I agree with you on that. And I hope you're right as far as like how they execute the segment. Like, to me, and maybe not a lot of people agree with this, but to me, like the hook here is the fact that they're one-on-one. That's like a fun element that I think is better than, oh, Cody and Roman are going to come to blows and start brawling over the arena. Like, I think it's much more enticing and intriguing to just know that they're going to be in the ring together and they're going to talk. Like, hopefully those two are good enough to showcase drama in that. Hopefully you can build tension there. And like boil the pot a little bit, not so it overflows, but so it just starts to simmer. And so by the time you get to WrestleMania, that's when it's overflowing. That's when it, you know, everybody comes out of their corner. But you have to have like segments like this. And I'm glad it's not, oh, they're going to be in a 6-man tag. And like this is much more nuanced than that. And so I hope you're right. And I'm with you that just let them do their thing. Let them do their thing. Have this be drama. This needs to be soap opera 101.
Hear me out though. The Rock, Roman Reigns, and you could do, I guess, Jimmy versus Cody, Seth, and Jey Uso.
Yeah, that would be pretty good.
That's a good one. Or the one that I really wanted to do was Rock, Roman, and Gunther versus Cody, Seth, and Sami Zayn. Come on. And
Sammy, yeah.
That'd be great. Do it on a house show. That's fine.
Do it on a house show, or like, you know, like you could do it. That's a good like post WrestleMania. Rock's not going to work that match, but
yeah, bring it to Saudi. Maybe he'll do it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, maybe you do it Saudi.
Full of money, it'll be all right.
But that's a good. I mean, that's a good. That's a good match, though. Like, you know, like that is a good match. You want it to me though. Like, there's a difference. I don't think you shouldn't do that match, but that shouldn't be like your only avenue to building the other one.
Yeah,
like. Do it, but it's not a, don't make it like a crutch. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I fully agree.
Yeah. Okay. And then last super chat here from Zach. Can Cody please cut this promo without using the words Dream, Dusty, or my father? Zach, do you know who you're talking about here? It's Cody Rhodes, my friend. Of course he's good. Look, I understand where, like, last year you going into WrestleMania, you could kind of roll your eyes at, like, oh man, he keeps talking about his dad. He keeps talking about the American Dream. He's talking about Dusty. It happened a lot last year. It's happened way less this go around. So I'm okay. Like, he has to evoke that a little bit, right, Joel? Because that's part of the story here. I mean, that is at the essence of this. It's not real, but at the essence of it, it's Cody chasing down the title that his dad never won. And so, like, I don't think you can completely, like, abandon that narrative. As long as he doesn't beat you over the head with it for the next 3 weeks, I'm fine with him, like, reminding people that that's a part of this. Joel?
Yeah, that is part of it. That you can't ignore Cody's, again, going back to modus operandi, that's what he came in with 2-3 years ago. He said,
yeah, it was, yeah.
I'm here for my dad. I'm here to win the title that he never won, or at least that he never got to keep for more than, you know, a couple hours. It makes sense. So why not hit? And it's relatable. People want right. to do, well, not everybody, but there's a swath of people who want to do right by their parents and be known as the good son who did good by their family. And then they've invoked Mama Rhodes, and they're going to invoke, I'm sure, the Rock's mom. Listen, everyone's going to be fighting at the end of WrestleMania. Literally the entire stadium is just going to be people brawling in the streets. And that's perfect for Philly.
Yes, it is.
And I just realized something. So today, Cody Rhodes is going to have Wheatley American Vodka as his new gimmick. They're going to do a Terramana vodka thing. They're going to do a Cheers. They're going to do that at probably the last SmackDown going into WrestleMania.
That, I mean, I could easily see that. Easy. They love those product integrations. I won't be the only one that they do at WrestleMania.
You're gonna have Seth Rollins just sitting there being like, you got whiskey, there's vodka, I've got Terramana, I've got Slim Jims.
Oh, you can't forget about Logan Paul's drink too. Look at the mat.
Mix it with some Prime. Whiskey and Prime. Oh.
Yum. The newest trend in mixed drinks. Oh my goodness.
You would.
All right, you guys, thanks so much for being here. I appreciate it. Thank you, Joel, for taking the time out of your day and your busy schedule to be with us and fill in for Tyler. It's always awesome talking wrestling with you, man. Once again, plug your stuff because you do a lot throughout the week, and let everybody know how they can hear more from you.
Not hard to find. I am at Joel Pearl, JoelPearl. You'll find me on Fightful every Thursday night for post TNA. You'll find me on Fightful Overbooked most of the time, going in the weeds with Jeremy Lambert every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 a.m. Eastern until noon, talking about wrestling. Whatever it is, whatever's out there, we're probably talking about it. So go and find us there.
All right. There you go. We actually had a late super chat come in. Zach is rebutting our point here. And Zach, we appreciate the contributions here to the show. Thank you. He says, that is why I say the minute Cody wins the title for Dusty, he'll be instantly less over because people care more about Dusty than Cody. Joel, are you buying or selling that argument?
Selling. I'm sorry. I don't like it. I'm not into it. He's there to do it for his dad, but he's not there to do it only for his dad. He's there to do it for himself. And to win a title that his dad never could. So he's going to show that this is for dad, but it's not only for dad. It's for, quote, you people. And we'll go from there. White meat baby face trying to win the title for the people.
That's where I'm at too, Zach. Like, just because he says one thing, it doesn't mean that everything else is off the table. Like, he still, I think it's like, it doesn't even need to be said that he wants it for himself. Like, it's not, this is not just a mission for his father. I think that's, to me, that's clear. And so, look, there's always a chance he's instantly less over, but I don't think it's going to be because of he evokes his dad in promos here. That won't be, to me, that won't be the trigger for it. It'll be a host of other things that may or may not go wrong with him as champion, but it won't be this one. Thank you, Zach. All right, guys. Yeah, we'll wrap up there. Thanks to Joel. This is the Brass Ring Media Podcast. We are live all throughout the week. Hit subscribe here on our channel so that you don't miss anything. Hit the notification button so you know when we got new videos going up. Moose, an interview with Moose, the TNA World Champion, is up on the channel right now. You can also check some written excerpts of that on our Substack newsletter. Search Brassring Media Substack and you can find it there. Hopefully you do, and hopefully you like the content there and subscribe to that as well. It is free to do so. Thanks for everybody who sent us in super chats. Zach, appreciate you, man. Tracy, thank you. Everybody else who tuned in live and chatted with us, thank you, thank you. If you aren't able to listen to the show live, you can obviously check it out after the fact on YouTube. We also run these simulcast as a podcast, and so you can get just the audio for this in minutes as soon as we get off the air here. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. For Joel, I'm Zach. We'll catch you guys next time. See ya.